Welcome to another edition of the How to Grow Your E-commerce Business podcast. I'm here with Sina Wheeler from Sina C, and Sina has generously agreed to share her e-commerce experience with us. So, Sina, you have the floor. Tell us about your business.
Hi, thanks for having me. We have, like you say, an e-commerce business. We sell, of all things, fish online. When we first started, we even thought we were crazy. We started in 2014. So not only was e-commerce, it was being done, but it wasn't as common. And then we decided to, my husband is a commercial fisherman in Alaska. He catches the best, most premium wild Alaskan salmon, halibut and black cod. And we decided to get our premium fish direct to people's doors all over the United States. And that's a pretty tall order, but it's taken us a while and we figured it out.
So do you, so obviously back in the fish industry, it wasn't like that you knew nothing about fish. So you knew a lot of, you know a lot about fish, but not much about e-commerce at the time.
Exactly. Yes.
So is it, because I always think with e-commerce businesses, right? The perfect kind of e-commerce thing to sell would be like jewelry, because it's really small. And it can just go in the place. But you've chosen like the most difficult thing to sell. Is it, am I right about that? Is it hard to do?
Oh, yeah. I dream of like, why didn't I just sell jewelry? For us, it was, we're very much fish people. I have a master's degree in food science studying fish. My husband's been a fisherman all his life, and we're five generations of fishermen. And so fish is what we know. And the doing it online and the shipping, we have just figured out from scratch. And just every time we have a problem, asking and, you know, searching for answers. And the shipping was really logistically challenging. We're shipping it frozen and we're using dry ice and gel packs, and we have insulated boxes and all of that. And so it's difficult, but now that we do it, it's very rewarding.
So how did you, sell a number, you have a fairly small kind of product catalog, or?
Well, actually you'd be surprised, because with like about five different types of fish, we have maybe 35, probably over 50 products by the time you slice it and dice it differently. We smoke it differently. We have shelf stable and frozen, and then we do bundles. So it kind of surprises me how many products.
Okay. So what do you, do you find, what is the most difficult bit about what you do? Is it the delivery, or is it?
Yeah, I come back to the perishable shipping. And perishable shipping has come a really long ways in the last couple of years, especially since COVID. We were a bit of a COVID success story, really, because we had been working on perishable shipping pre-COVID. So when COVID hit, everybody was trying to figure it out, and we were ready to go. We had a warehouse, and we had a streamline. We had the products, the packaging, and we quadrupled overnight. And so that's been definitely the hardest learning curve. But now that we have it set up, it's like, okay, now we can go for it.
So do you find with, fish obviously has issues with going off, and if people eat fish that's gone off, then they can get quite sick. Mm-hmm. Do you have problems with that? Does it have to, how quickly does it have to get delivered to ensure that it's in pristine condition?
My background is food science, and that is one reason that we chose frozen. I know that people have a perception that fresh is better, but actually fresh can take 7-10 days to get to somebody, and that's where you're really dealing with it going off, and the time is ticking. You cannot stop that time clock unless you freeze it. So when we sell frozen product, we freeze at the peak of freshness, straight off the dock, and we freeze it really well in, what's professional freezers. And then we are shipping with dry ice. So it makes it quite simple. As long as it arrives frozen, it's in perfect condition. If it's defrosted, we replace it.
Is it expensive to send, compared to, obviously sending something that doesn't need to be refrigerated?
Oh, yeah.
What's the price difference?
The price, you're still just paying the weight and overnight So the overnight is what makes it expensive. And then we have to have dry ice and gels, which add weight. So the fact that you have to get it there quick and that you're adding coolant and you have to pay for the coolant is expensive.
So is this like a premium product? Like a really, I mean, how much would, you know, what's your average order value?
$250.
Oh, right. Okay. So if I was to buy a fish from you, like a fish supper, what's that? What does that work at? You probably do pounds, don't you? What's it per pound?
Well, you know, I try not to put it to pounds and because when you do the math, you're like, wow, that's very expensive. It is definitely a premium product. That is something that people can't find. So by the time it's shipped to your door, you're spending, I don't know, probably over $50 a pound.
Okay. So what kind of people would be spending money? You know, who are your customers?
Our customers are people, for one, excuse me, it really goes into our values. So that's one reason how we market. So it goes into the wild caught, wild and sustainable and caught by us. So people that really care about where their food comes from, who's catching it, knowing it's been done right and having that trust and you know, spending money or investing in their health as well. So it's the wild, the sustainable, it's the trust. And then it's also, because we fish in Alaska, it's the best fish on the planet. And so it's going to be the best. And that helps a lot when it doesn't matter how much people spend when they get it, they go, wow, that was the best fish I've ever had. So, and that's our goal.
So is that how you differentiate your products? It's just it's the best.
Yes.
And do you? I'm guessing. Are there many people doing what you do?
Nobody doing exactly what we do. In that we catch the fish. We actually run our own processing facility, so we're actually cutting and freezing the fish, and then we're shipping it ourselves. I'm packing the boxes, and nobody does that. And that's because it's way too much work. Now I know why.
No, I've done a lot of packing. So do you sell like you sell wholesale as well?
Yeah, because business. We have the processing facility. We sell wholesale from the processing facility, but our C&C brand is really the cream off the top in terms of, premium fish, premium quality, and that goes to our retail direct to customer.
So is the wholesale or the retail part of the business bigger?
If you take in the whole processing facility, probably the wholesale, but on the C&C side, so once we get it down, we might wholesale a little bit out of the warehouse. And on the C&C e-commerce side, the wholesaling is very small. If that makes sense. But if you take into account our whole fish processing operation in Alaska, the wholesaling is bigger.
So how do you, okay, that's really interesting. So how do you, tell me about how you promote your business or how you've grown your business. What, you know, what channels have you used? What, you know, have you, is it word of mouth or?
Yeah, we started our website, and a lot of people probably have, you know, we'd never built a website before. We started our website, we sort of like popped the champagne and, you know, yay. And then it's just crickets as websites are. We'd never done anything like that before. So we have the website, and I'm really grateful that in the beginning we actually started a email list at the time. Mm-hmm. We live very rural, and it's 2014. I'm not on anybody's lists at the time. I don't even know really what an email list is. But when I was in an online business program, and they said, you know, put this little list thing on. So I did. And thank goodness I did, because in the beginning, I was just talking to our friends and family, 40 people, you know, and I started emailing. And that's really how we found our brand voice, and we can really communicate with our customers. And we have a much bigger list now, and we really, we educate and we share recipes and we talk about the season and how it's going. And when we have fish, we can just say, hey, you know, it's here, and we sell. So
what percentage of your sales come from email?
Over 50%, probably. I would have to look at the number, but I know it's over 50%, but it's probably like 80 or 90.
Right. So you keep your marketing costs very low then, because you get so much repeat business.
Yeah, over 70% repeat business.
Gosh, that's really healthy. So that enables you to keep you. So, I mean, is it how would you describe it? Is it a high margin, low margin business, or is it it's a premium product?
Yeah, it's a premium product, and you might expect it to be high margin in some ways, but because I just was doing the breakdown, and because of the shipping, we have the shipping built into the cost, and the shipping is so expensive that really it's not that high margin. It is probably pretty fairly low by the time you're with all the costs of what we really do.
Okay. So do you do much social media? Do you find that works for you?
I do social media, and I ebb and flow on when I, care and when I get a little burnt out. but I'm kind of getting back into it. And one reason is we've never advertised. We've never run ads. And I'm getting started on that. So I want to kind of up my social media so I can kind of use some of those good videos as ads. So I have kind of a new steam around social media, but sometimes I'm into it and sometimes I just feel like this is a never ending loop,
So you've grown your business without spending any money on ads at all. So no Google, nothing.
Correct.
I'm just thinking you could do things like, YouTube video. You could do probably work really well on YouTube.
Yeah, we would work really well on YouTube. One of the main problems is it's just my husband's fishing. We have three kids at home and it's me running everything.
Right.
And so there's a lot of things we could do. And I am working on hiring a little bit here and there. But we have a YouTube channel and, if I put more stuff on it.
So do you find, what is it? It's your email list and recipes and stuff like that that really helps grow, encourage people to buy food, buy your fish.
Yeah. And really talking about us and our lifestyle, it's that trust part where people really enjoy buying their food from us. And I answer all the emails on our emails too. And people respond and people, Sina, what would you recommend? And things like that. So I feel like it's that personal touch that people are really enjoying as well.
Okay. So you don't sell, you just sell on the website. I'm guessing you don't sell on Amazon or anything like that.
No, we don't. I haven't. I've been a little scared of Amazon.
Well, I think everyone's a bit scared of Amazon. Okay. So what do you find? I mean, what are your plans for the business? How are you going to grow it in the future?
Well, I am working on starting ads, and I do realize that as much as I've been kind of proud that we haven't used ads to grow, and we have had amazing growth, a lot of it due to COVID, like I mentioned. And I've been kind of like patting myself on the back. Wow, we did that organically without, wasting money on ads was kind of my thinking. And now I realize, we could have been putting money into ad spend, and that money could have been coming back through sales and growing us, and growing our list at a more steady clip. And so I do feel like I should have been investing in that area and not ignoring it. And that's the next area I'm going to go into is really just understanding the ads and putting more effort into that instead of, I just really had this kind of like, not me attitude.
Well, so are you limited by inventory? I mean, I don't know how much you can fish. Do you have fishing quotas or?
So we have, there are quotas. There's several systems because we do several types of fish. There's quotas, and in the salmon industry, it is limited by the actual run. So we fish sustainably in Alaska. And so when the actual run comes in first, a million fish need to pass through the counter before we even put nets in the water. And then every twice a week, they're counting the fish, and we don't put our nets in unless we're over a certain amount of fish returning. So we're literally catching the overage. And so it just completely depends on the run that year. How many fish are coming back is how many, you know, you take what needs to spawn, and we're taking the overage. So we really, that's the crazy thing about wild fish. We really don't know. We don't know if we're going to have a huge run or a small run. We do a bit of pre-sailing, but we're pretty careful on that because we really don't know.
So how often do you soak? Tell me about your year. Then how does it work? You know, do you only fish at certain times of the year, or is it all year round, or how does it work?
Excuse me. It's very cyclical and it's very predictable. So in April, our halibut and black cod will open in the spring. Mm-hmm. Everything's closed in the winter. So if you see fresh salmon in the winter, you know something
exists
because it's not wild. It might be farmed or it might be refreshed, pulled out of a freezer, but there's no wild fishing in the winter. So in April, we'll start halibut, black cod, and my husband fishes for that. We also have other fishermen that we know and trust that we bring in also. And then mid-May is when the Copper River opens. And the Copper River is famous. Wild Alaskan fish is the best, but of that, this Copper River where we fish is the best of the best. And that's because, for one thing, it runs first. So when that river, when those salmon return, you can't fish for the salmon until they return on their clock. So when they're returning, that's the first fish on the planet that's commercially available and, you know, fresh and ready. And then it happens to be the best because the river is cold and tumultuous and the fish just put on more omega-3s, which make them taste better and be healthier.
Mm-hmm.
So getting ready for that opener is a really big deal. The whole community is a huge, huge deal. And everybody is very anticipating, you know, it's going to be a great run and a big year. And there's Copper River King, Copper River Sake. So anyways, everything we do, we pre-sell, and I go up there, I go on the boat with my husband. I get on the plane and bring the fish back and we sell it fresh for a couple of weeks. So it's a very big deal, very busy, a lot going on. And then we're going to be doing salmon all through the summer, June, July. In August, we'll start Copper River Coho. So it's another species. And when that runs through September, so then we're kind of selling coho, and then October we actually shut the plant down, so power and everything like that is so expensive in Alaska that we close the whole plant down and send everything frozen down to Washington State, where we live and where our warehouse is, and we keep it frozen down there for power. Costs are much less. And that's where we live, and that's where we ship out all winter. So during the, and then we're having products smoked. So then around that time, which is perfect, right before Christmas, October, November, we're getting our smoked products back from the smokehouses, and then we're fully stocked for Christmas.
Okay, so you sell do you sell all year round then?
And we sell all year round. We stockpile for winter because it's frozen. It stays frozen really well. So we package it to last at least a year. And so this time of year, we're managing our inventory and looking at, you know, we've put up as what we can. And we usually, it's amazing, but we usually run right into April and May. And we're just selling out of one product right before we start fishing the next.
Okay, cool. So I'm just trying to think are you thinking about kind of, you know, augmenting your product range with any other things, like, you know, selling sauces and stuff with this, or?
I've tried a few things, to be honest. You know, one thing I thought this, we do a few sauces and a few spices, and that's okay. We're just used to, you know, a pretty high AOV and things like that. So it's like, a little $10 seasoning we've messed around with. But this year, I thought, well, our list is buying frozen fish. You know, we're shipping it all over the country. And we go to a local farmer's market where we sell, and we have a beef vendor next to us. I thought, well, I will sell their amazing beef that they, you know, regenerative ranch, all of the same things as our fish, all of the sustainable talking points. And we put that on and talk to our list, and I thought it would go really well, and it really hasn't. So, oh, no. So I played around with a few things, but it's the fish that sells.
People want the fish. So what is the future of kind of, you know, of eating meat, do you think, or fish? I mean, are we all, because in the UK, I mean, we have these people say that North Sea cod is, you know, it's so depleted, it's never going to come back. Do you think that eventually we're all going to have to start eating vegetarian food? Do we all eat too much meat?
I've heard that theory. And when it comes to fish, I mean, I will say this, it's all about methodology to me. So, you know, some people think it's splitting hairs, but I think it's really important. If you look at, for fish, you're looking at wild versus farmed. So the wild fish, they go out and they feed themselves naturally in the wild.
Yeah.
And they come back, and they come back plenty. There's a little bit of, not all species are the same. So I will say that, yes, there's like, there are species that we really need to be watchful of, but we are up in Alaska with Copper River salmon, or I should say wild Alaskan salmon, Bristol Bay, the biggest river in Alaska 2 years ago, had the biggest run ever recorded, the biggest return ever recorded of salmon. So the sustainable efforts there are really working. We've been fishing sustainably from the beginning, and it's actually really working. And you just don't hear about that because it confuses people. But there are places where this is really working, where the wild fish is actually, I mean, like I said, a bigger return than they've ever recorded in the history of the fish. So I think that wild can be done correctly, and that when done correctly, it's much more sustainable. You're not feeding the fish, you're not polluting the waters, you're not actually adding any inputs, they're doing it themselves, and you just have to make sure to catch the right amount. So that the regulations on the catch is super important, and what we've been doing forever in Alaska. I think the same thing in terms of land meats, it can be done right. It can be done right on a regenerative ranch. It's with crop rotations and all of that, you know, you look at that versus a CAFO situation where it's clearly unsustainable. So I think that the way I kind of fall, I know that there's a land versus sea, and I think that sea wins in the land versus sea, but I think there's also a methodology conversation, which is, yes, it's more expensive, and yes, you might have to reduce the amount of protein you're eating, but if you're eating wild or regeneratively raised, then you're eating kind of the methodology makes more sense. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Cause I think we all eat too much meat, especially in the US. We all eat far too much meat, particularly not enough fish. I think
just, you know, in the US we say you should have 2 servings a week of fish, and just taking 2 servings a week out of how much meat you eat and replacing that with fish. If everybody did that, that would make a huge difference.
So have you had British fish and chips?
I don't think so.
Can be really good. Can be really bad, but it can be really good as well.
Oh, well, I
like
do.
Deep fried battered fish. And chips. See, it's been great hearing about your story. Can you tell me, what's inspired you recently? Have you anything we need to know about that any films, any books?
I love watching The Crown.
Oh, really? Excellent.
It's been really fun. I actually enjoy it. And it'll be a whole nother conversation, but I am distantly and illegitimately related to Princess Diana.
Really?
Really?
Excellent. So she, I've watched most of it. I got a bit bored of the last series. But it's good British. It is probably most interesting because of the kind of British history. It's just, you know, the whole you know, it's not just about the crown, it's about what was going on at the same time, which is interesting. But oh, that's good. Well, no, I've enjoyed that as well. Though I think if it's in I'm the one Republican in the entire country. I don't want the royal family. It's just me, I think. And
I think whether you do or don't is so interesting. I love the way they show, you know, I would hate to be born into the crown. It's a burden. I mean, they did portray that really well.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you should be like, I want to be, you know, like the like America, where you got rid of the tyrant George III or whatever that was. So I'm always surprised when I meet Americans that love the royal family. I was like, God, your whole country was founded to get rid of them, and here you're saying you like them.
Yeah, so, well, we've forgotten.
Yes, clearly. Sina, thanks very much, and good luck for the future.
Thank you.
Thanks. Great, that was.